Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
The wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to follow your heart. Live free, and beauty surrounds you. The world still astounds you. It's time you look at a star. Stay free where no walls divide you. You're free as a roaring tide, so there's no need to hide. Born free, and life is worth living, but only worth living 'cause you're born free.
Matt Munro, the one and only, Born Free, from the film, the soundtrack of the film Born Free, which was released in 1966, and it also features on the album. This is Matt Munro.
Well, you know something, it's a song from my youth, this, because, of course, the film was fantastic, and the man with the golden voice, that's what they called him, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, and, you know, a very easy baritone sound, and, you know, when people listen to the show, we often get comments about how eclectic it is, and it is, because these are songs from our youth, and just because it's Matt Munro, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's not a great song, and it's not well sung, and not well arranged, because George Martin has something to do with this, didn't he?
Funny enough, you know, that's so true. And I was really surprised when I read that, because before George Martin was working with the Beatles, he was actually working in comedy, and he was working with Peter Sellers, and he asked Matt Munro, this is George Martin, if he would record a satirical ditty to help, it was Peter Sellers, to imitate the song with a Frank Sinatra type of feel. So he did this song for Peter Sellers, and anyway, Peter Sellers arranged it so that Munro was actually cited and called Fred Flange.
Fred Flange, yeah. Great word, Flange. Oh,
so we went down, apparently he was a bit embarrassed by it, and it wasn't actually a very good thing for him. But what it did do was it cemented the beginning of a lifelong friendship with George Martin, and he basically oversaw a lot of the production and recordings of Matt Munro's career. But, the funny thing is, though, how he discovered this again is when we've been setting up the studio here in Germany, and we've been playing through our vinyl, and my mum had this track,
of course, yeah,
on a vinyl that I inherited. So your upper ladder crooning away, singing along to Born Free.
Born Free.
You were so funny. But what was really beautiful about it was that it filled the whole studio with this great feel. We were so happy.
Yeah, it did.
Singing along to Matt Monro. And I was thinking, why? What's happening here? Because this is the most obscure thing. Because it took me back to my childhood. Because obviously,
the great songs, the great songs, baby. This is the thing. The great songs, the well sung, the well arranged. You know, because this was written by John Barry, the mighty John Barry. You know,
yeah, of course.
This guy's written more hits than you can shake a stick at. You know, you can shake a stick at a lot of hits. I'm telling you that.
Yeah.
You know, and it was recorded at the City Hall in Glasgow, and featured the Royal Scottish National Orchestra on this.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was done in one take. No messing about. No auto-tune or anything. He just got up there and did it. And that lovely note at the end where he's got that constant vibrato note, a real, you know, it's a real showstopper that at the end, isn't it? It's like a Shirley Bassey moment where she goes, whoa, you know.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, it's restored my respect for Matt Monro, really has, because his voice is so beautiful, and he is one of the underrated pop stars of the 60s and 70s. I mean, he was huge for a long time, and he actually got, by the end of the 50s, though, I mean, he died really young at 55, but he was actually poor again and having to live, his wife Mickey was a radio plugger, and they were living off her income.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this is it. This is the ups and downs of a
career. Because he did From Russia With Love as well, didn't he?
He did.
He sang on that, the James Bond film, which is amazing.
You would think that he would actually be set up for life, but then you think, well, how much money do people spend as well? I mean, there is that. You know, it's about if you earn a lot of money, it's also what the outgoings are.
Yeah, he was probably
what his
really
tastes
living
were.
It up. Yeah, that's right.
But also, you know, everyone knows it doesn't last forever. So I think he probably, you know.
And the writers actually get most of the money. I mean, that's the thing.
That's true, actually.
With a lot of performers now, you know, the actual royalty you get, certainly mechanically now, because there's no mechanical royalty anymore, because, you know, people don't really buy CDs or records, really. You know, not in the quantity they used
to
be.
No, that's true, isn't it?
So it's very interesting. But anyway, that's what a great surprise.
We're going to have some more Matt Monro on the show for definite. I love this guy.
Definitely.
Top.
Little bitty boy,
Smokestack Lightning by Howling Wolf, a.k.a. Chester Arthur Burnett, released a single in March 1956 on the Chess record label. Fantastic. You know something? We haven't had any Wolf on the show, ever.
I know.
I can't believe it.
I was just sat there listening to it then going, what an amazing voice this guy's got. Yeah. The whole feel of the track is just so Wolf-like.
Yeah, well, he was, the thing is, he was one of the original Chicago bluesmen and revered. I mean, the song really came to fore in my head before I heard this with the Yardbirds, of course. The Yardbirds on the original Five Live Yardbirds, I think that's the album. And Eric Clapton made his appearance on that for the first time. And that was the definitive British version. But when you listen back to the original version, it's so great. You know, apparently he was amazing live and he could just bring a house down anywhere he played. You know, it was incredible.
That's crazy, isn't it? It's a bit weird, isn't it? It's like, you know, I'll blow your house down.
Yeah.
Wolf.
Yeah.
Type thing. Well, that's the kind of guy he was. Now, yeah. I didn't realise this as well, that there's a critic, Cub Coda, said no one could match Howling Wolf for the singular ability to rock the house down to the foundation while simultaneously scaring its patrons out of its wits. I wonder what that was about. I know. Sam Phillips, producer, said, when I heard Howling Wolf, he said, this is for me. This is where the soul of man never dies. And you can feel it. Do you know what it reminded me as well? I could hear a bit of Katie Tunstall in there, you know, woohoo. And there's lots of people like Adele. You can hear loads and loads and loads.
Yeah, you know, I'd never noticed that. Woohoo. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
It's odd. I was thinking, where have I heard that before?
Well.
So, but this is quite beautiful. I mean, obviously, this song was written by Chester. Mm. I love the fact his middle name's Arthur. It's great. He performed the Smokestack Lightning in one form or other in the early 1930s when he was playing with Charlie Patton in the small Delta communities.
Wow.
But it's like, they call it like a one chord drone piece. You can hear it because it's mesmerising, isn't it? Or mesmeric. That's a really odd word.
Manish Boy, that's the same, isn't it? You know, it's like, it's just the same all the way through, just one riff, but great.
So this is like, it draws on earlier blues influences. So you've got sort of songs like Big Road Blues by Tommy Johnson, Stop and Listen Blues, The Mississippi Shakes, on Moon Going Down in 1930 with Charlie Patton. And apparently it was inspired by watching trains in the night. So we used to sit out in the country and see the trains go by and watch the sparks come out of the smokestack. That was Smokestack Lightning.
Wow. Why is he called Howling Wolf? I've got something about that. Somewhere.
Oh,
why
yeah, yeah, his grandfather. It was when he was a kid. His grandfather used to tell him stories about wolves in that part of the country where he lived, and he warned him that if he misbehaved, the howling wolves would go and get him.
Wow. There's wolves around here, aren't there?
There are.
Yeah, of course. And, of course, wild boar.
No, that's not funny now, because we had an event the other night for May Day, and you were trying to wind me up going, asking the guys, the local people, going, right, okay, so are there snakes? No. Yes, there are. You know, it's like, are there wild boar? Are there wolves? There are wolves.
There are wolves. Definitely. There's definitely wild boar, I know that. And the snakes, they're not poisonous, so that's okay.
So thanks very much, feeling dank.
But we live in a very wooded area, don't we, which is really unusual. We've never lived in like a forest area before.
No, I feel like I'm in sort of like a Tolkien-esque kind
of it's amazing.
Dreamscape. It feels fantastic, and the people have been ever so welcoming, and just love it. So Germany, flipping egg, brilliant.
Lower Saxony rocks.
Yeah, it absolutely does. So this Howling Wolf then, He was the beginning of the Chicago blues, wasn't he? He was one of the...
Yeah, one of the founding fathers, really. Well, he was playing in 1930. You know, he was playing this song in 1930. I mean, that's really early, you know?
It's mad, isn't it? And, you know, always, and to just get a little bit of a feel of someone, you know, his parents separated when he was one, and his mum chucked him out as a young kid because he refused to work on the farm.
Is that right?
He was not even 10.
Wow.
8 maybe or something.
Different world, different life, different age.
I know.
Incredible, isn't it?
And at the peak of his career, he went back to try and rekindle a relationship with his mum and wanted to support her. And she basically refused any help and didn't want to know him because she said that his money came from the devil's music.
Yeah.
seasons don't fear the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain.
We can be like they are.
Come on, baby,
don't fear the reaper.
Baby, take my hand.
Don't fear the reaper.
We'll be able to fly.
Don't fear the reaper.
Baby, I'm your man. La 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 la. La.
The Blue Oyster Cult and Don't Fear the Reaper, and that's from the band's 1976 album Agents of Fortune, released in July 76 on the Columbia record label.
Forget the track. Let's go straight to the
more cowbell, please. Is that what you're going to say?
This is a legendary song, which is it's in rock and roll legend. That's all I can say. I said legend twice. But the thing is that there's that sketch. Was it Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, with Will Ferrell.
And that's right. And it's called More Cowbell in April 2007. It's Will Ferrell, and he's playing an overweight cowbell player, isn't he? Christopher Walken.
He's called Gene Frenkel.
Yeah.
That was it.
and he comes in and he says, explore the space, and he's going mad with his cowbell, and it is the most fun. I can't describe it. It's so funny, though.
You've got to watch it on YouTube. Haven't. Yeah. And in fact, I think it's like it should be like an annual thing just to go back, because it's so, it is funny, isn't it? Really, 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 really funny.
Well, it is, and it never ceases to laugh. And when we were in Spain in the studio, we had some musicians in, and we started playing it, and it was unbelievable, and I started dancing around, because I was producing the record at the time, and I was dancing around with the cowbell.
You were. I remember that, actually. It's become part of everyone's life, though. I mean, the guy was saying that he read in an American car magazine, and halfway through the description, it just said, "What this car needs is more cowbell." You know? So it's just like really weird. Now, the thing is with this band, I don't really know them that well, the Blue Oyster Cult.
Well, they're massive. I mean, they're a massive American rock and roll band, extremely successful. Of course, it's the biggest song they ever did, I think.
Yeah.
But
they were formed in New York in 1967.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that Donald Rosa, or Buck Dharma as he's known,
yeah,
who's the guitar player who wrote this song or co-wrote it,
yeah.
It's very interesting because he's a bit of a legendary guitar player, because he does play quite unusually, and he's got a bit of a, you know, because that solo, the whole thing and the whole line, it's beautifully written. And apparently the riff was done on Murray Krugman's Gibson 175, which is like it's basically a big body jazz thing, you know,
right, okay.
Through a Music Man 410
combo. I thought you'd like that bit.
Yeah, and Buck Dharma's vocals was captured using a Valve U47, Telefunken, which is like the Telefunken version of the Neumann, which we have
of course,
of the studio. And so it's you know, and recorded at the Record Plant as well in New York.
No way.
Yeah, you know, so it's a really interesting story, you know.
Apparently the riff came first on this song, and I didn't realise this because he was 22 at the time. This is Buck who wrote the song, and he was just diagnosed with an irregular heart condition.
Is that right?
Yeah, and so it got it thinking about what happens if he dies young. And so he was actually just sort of using Romeo and Juliet as motifs, believing, like, for a couple who believed they'd meet in the afterlife. And he had a wild guess at how many people die daily, and he said 40,000 in the song. He was like 100,000 out.
Blimey.
It's 140,000 per day at that point, when the population was 4.1 billion.
Wow.
But he was just saying, actually, I mean, the thing is that he's also, people saying, no, that's your song, and are you not fed up with the fact that everyone plays, you know, Don't Fear the Reaper? And he's just said, I'm just grateful I've got one song.
Well, you know, I mean, Lynyrd Skynyrd and Freebird. I mean, that's another one for Freebird. I mean, people always want me to play that song.
When I'm doing
jams and stuff, let's do Freebird. And I actually had to play it once. I was forced because somebody started it and I was on stage. Somebody starts, oh no. It's like Sweet Home Alabama, you know, that's another one. But this is far more, to me, a far more classy sort of song. And if somebody said, will you play this? I said, yeah, that'd be pretty good. Providing, of course, I could play the cowbell.
Ah!
From that far, I've shed a tear for you, a flowing fountain. body's young, my mind is strong, away from Thunder Town.
Where the Hawkwind Kills by Daniel Lanois from his debut album Acadie, originally released on the 26th of September 1989 on Opal and Warner Brothers Records and reissued in 2005. And we have the vinyl, but it's been done specially on one of these specialist labels in 180 gram and it sounds absolutely magnificent. I was going to swear then, but it sounds magnificent.
It is. It's like our go-to record, isn't it?
Yeah.
For when we want to be rocked.
Well, you know, I mean, we play a lot of Daniel Lanois on this line. Everybody knows that, you know, either production or whatever, he is my favourite producer of all time. I'd so closely associate with him, it's just untrue, because virtually everything he does, he plays guitar, he produces, the way he records, the way he speaks about music is exactly right down my street.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd just leave you to it. You get you two in a room together, that'd be it.
Oh.
See you in a week.
You know, I will meet him. I've got to meet him. I've got to work with Daniel Lanois. There's absolutely no doubt, because I just love his music so much and I love his production.
His heartbeat, though, it's very similar to yours.
Thank you. It seems to come in. We've talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we watched the video recently. What is it called? That video? Or DVD. And it's just... his textures, that's what I love. And his mix, his mix sensibility, it's amazing. And what I find very interesting is on this, is particularly the drum pattern. It's like, it's very fast. It's like and the track's quite slow, but the way it mixes, and those magnificent, I don't know whether it's keyboards, because he uses pedal steel a lot, but it's highly treated. When it comes, it's just amazing. What a just a great, and his guitar is so beautiful, all that delay on it. It's and the lyric. Anyway.
I was going to say, we need to ask, we know Malcolm Byrne, who's a friend of ours, who played on the track. We need to just ask Malcolm how he did it.
Well,
why don't we do that?
I think we should ask Malcolm, and also we need to get to meet him. So that's when he's in Germany.
That's
right. Let's talk about the album Arcady, but very briefly.
Well, yeah, because I only just found this out like now, well, and last night, about, because I was thinking, well, what does Arcady mean? And the title derives from a group of 18th century French settlers who were forced out of their native Canada by the British. So they called themselves the Arcadians after the Greek, with their rural training and their strong kind of pastoral culture. And they used to do lots of dancing and singing as part of who they were. And they settled west of New Orleans in a place called Lafayette.
Ah.
So the word Cajun comes from them, and the music has become an integral part of American folk identity. So, of course, Daniel Lanois, being French-Canadian and having experienced a culture shock and isolation, when he moved away from his French-speaking Ottawa to the English, more English-orientated Hamilton, he was thinking that, you know, that word Acadie has a special significance for him. And he talks about, you know, going in and into Lafayette and getting to hang out with the Neville brothers and to be a part of that scene and to work with him, you know. I mean, that's just so inspirational and beautiful, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked about it last time, but, you know, it's part of the trio of albums, you know.
Yes, of course.
With the Bob Dono Mercy album, Yellow Moon by the Neville Brothers, and this. But the interesting thing is that I found out the other day when I was looking through the books, because I was looking at what, because I'm a real super geek when it comes to...
You are. You get that little sparkle.
And he's got this, he's done a great book, and it's which we've read as well. And on this, he was using an old AMEC mobile console. It was an AMEC console, like a live console. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're going to get for the new studio. Well, not an AMEC, but because we need something that we can move about. Because we decided a large format console, and if it, you know, large format consoles, they can weigh up to like 600, 700 kilos. And yeah. I tried and did. So that it's very impractical to move about, isn't it? So we need something mobile that we can take around, because we're sort of a bit nomadic, aren't we, really?
People ask us that. And the thing is that we do move around, but we follow the music. We follow the heartbeat. It's like if you have a desire in your heart, like Daniel Lamar did, to go down to New Orleans, we had a calling to come to Germany, didn't we? To be a part of mainland Europe and for our touring. And we're not just here, we're Isle of Man, we're everywhere.
Yeah.
We travel.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Australia and...
Of course.
And, you know, the Netherlands, we've got... Yeah, there's lots of stuff happening this year. We're very excited, aren't we? But it's really cool.
We've got some big festivals coming as well. Yeah. Very excited.
Yeah,
about.
Very, very. We can't talk about
it yet. I know.
But, we're going to send a newsletter out tonight anyway about all our latest stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want to be a part of the newsletter about the show or whatever, you can always look at... newsletter.star-campbell.com. If you go to that, you will find the sign in, and just drop your email in, and we'll get in touch.
Do you know what's really lovely as well is that when we meet people who are fans of the show and listen on a regular basis, they talk to us as if they know us, because they do, because we are who we are. We're not putting anything on. So when we met Jan and Yvonne Van Eck in the Netherlands a few months ago, beautiful couple,
great,
fantastic friend. We were friends straight off because we both do radio shows on the same station
at
Radio Duivenstraat. I need to ask him how you pronounce it. I'm so sorry. Duivenstraat.
It's Dutch, baby. Oh, it's lots of...
I know. So, and that's the whole point. I mean, the whole point for us is about making music and meeting people, because that's the beauty, the treasure of life, isn't it? That's what it's all about, surely.
Well, it is. And I think that the inspiration we get with moving around, though, I think that is something that is really special. And, you know, the Spanish, you know, environment when we're recording Blueberry Pie sort of gave us a certain thing. And I'm sure now that the German environment is going to give us something different and, you know, but just as beautiful.
Bob Marley and the Wailers, and I Shot the Sheriff, released as a 12-inch single in 1973 on Turf Gong and Island Records, and it also appears on his sixth studio album, Burning, by the Wailers.
But this is the live version.
It is.
Recorded at the Lyceum, is it?
Yeah, by
That's
our
right,
mate.
By our mate Phil Brown. You can almost taste the marijuana in that track. The clouds of ganja smoke.
So laid back.
Oh, man. You know, it's... And you know, what I can never understand about a song, because I've played this quite a lot. I've played it quite a lot on guitar over the years. You know, it's a great song to play.
Oh, it is.
It's a lovely thing. Because the Eric Clapton version, of course, is the one that, you know, everybody sort of picked up on. But, I mean, this is the best version to me.
Yeah.
But it's such a magnificent, you know, tune, isn't it? It's great.
Do you know what's really funny, though? You know, when we were in Spain and we used to go to the jams and occasionally they play this. And I was always thinking, slow down, because everyone's going really fast. It's like the groove. It's got to be... They were doing more of the Clapton version. It needs to be right back.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, because our mate Will Lydgate, who's totally into reggae, he runs Steelgrass Farm, Chocolate Farm in Hawaii. So we know this guy who has a chocolate farm, who's an incredible bass player. It's just really weird.
He's got a studio on the farm as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. So you've got all this kind of studio, but he's totally into reggae. And I always think of Will when I listen to songs like this, because he's so into it. But it's the bass on, I love reggae bass.
Yeah.
It's just really, and it comes in at really irregular times as well. It's kind of cheeky.
Oh, it's a great...
It's beautiful.
But it's all about the rhythm section, yeah. You know, on this. And it's a great vocal and everything. But, I mean, what a marvellous artist. But Phil, and let's talk a bit about Phil, because Phil Brown... Go on.
Recording engineer. Yeah. Amazing. And, well, producer as well. But, I've got some notes on Phil.
Go on,
because I want to be really accurate
about
this.
Come
on, let's go. So, anyway, we know Phil. We met him a few months ago, and he's an absolute gentleman and... amazing company and just such a joy to be in our lives. So really,
we drank
really,
a lot of red wine.
We did, didn't we? Yeah. We had a great night. So this song was and the album with the Wailers, it was tracked a lot in Kingston at Harry J Studios, and it was finished in London.
Legendary, yeah.
And Phil was one of the engineers along with Tony Platt for this album. So Phil started as a tape op at Olympic Studios in London in November 1967. And if you're fans of the show and you listen, you know Olympic is just one of the studios where so many amazing songs and
my favorite studio in the
exactly.
world. Exactly. Yeah. So
Phil started off there. This is just weird. And he was initially trained by industry greats like Keith Grant, Glyn Johns, Eddie Kramer, and he was also, can you imagine, he was working with artists like the Rolling Stones, the Small Faces, I can't believe this, Traffic, and Jimi Hendrix. So that's not a bad start, hey? And then in 1970, after he built a Toronto Sound, which is Canada's first 16-track studio with his brother Terry, Phil then became a house engineer at the newly opened Island Records facility on Basing Street in central London. And that's where he initially worked with outside clients and stayed there until going freelance in 1976. By then, his credits included Harry Nilsson, Jeff Beck, Led Zeppelin, Robert Palmer, and of course, Robert Nesta Marley, who was a member of the Wailers, first worked alongside Phil on the band's second album, which is obviously this one, Burning, in 1973.
Yeah.
So I just cannot, I mean, what...
He's another
one
who really, he's another one who really associate with him. When you listen to him and sit down, you listen to the rock and roll stories. He's done a great book as well. Are We Still Rolling? Well worth a read.
Absolutely.
It's a great book actually, because it's really about hedonism and the rock and roll lifestyle. I mean, it's unbelievable what they were getting up to. So that's Robert Palmer. Great book. I won't reveal anymore.
No. Yeah, buy the book.
But he's the way he records and the way he mixes is very similar to. You know,
well, your kindred spirits.
Yeah, he likes recording everything live. And you can hear from that performance, it's very, very clear, beautiful sound, you know. And what I love about Phil's work in a lot of the cases, it's actually a lot of simplicity, because he recorded the guitar solo on Stairway to Heaven. Did you know that?
Yeah, I think so, I remember. In fact, I can't quite correlate that or process that information.
Bit numb, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's it. Phil Brown, we love him. And Bob Marley, we love him too.
This song, you know, it was about, apparently, Bob wanted to initially write, I shot the police, but he thought the government would kick up such a fuss, so that he said, I shot the sheriff. And I remember that time I wound you up, because I was going, I shot the sheriff, but I didn't shoot him up. A tree.
And think of the lyrics on this as well. I never know about this bucket business, because the bucket goes down the well and eventually the bottom will drop out. Now, it's something that has always mystified me, because this line I just don't understand. But then I was just listening to all the audience going, whoa, just after that line. So it's clearly some references that I'm not getting. But anyway, we'll have to find out.
No, I can't guess that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. No, I can't forget tomorrow when I think of all my sorrow. Well, I had you there, but then I let you go. And now it's only fair that I should let you know what you should know. Oh, I can't live if living is without you. I can't live, I can't give in. Always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. Can't live living here without you. I can't live, I can't give anymore. I can't.
Harry Nilsson, Without You, released as a single on the 11th of October 1971 on RCA Records, and a month later on his seventh album, Nilsson Schmilsson.
I love that title, Nilsson Schmilsson.
Yeah, great, but written by the guys from Badfinger.
Indeed.
Because, you see, the thing is that he actually wrote some great songs. Everyone's talking and needed that one. But he listened to this and he thought it was a Beatles song. Did you know that?
Oh, right.
Oh, I didn't get you there. I thought I got you.
I can't believe you haven't read the notes. All my hard work. It's there. Yeah, because he was at a party and he heard the track and he thought it was a Beatles. And then when he found out that it wasn't and it was Badfinger, he decided to go ahead and record a version of it.
Well, what you won't know and you won't have looked up.
Go on, bring it on.
That this, it was recorded at Trident Studios.
Now!
And also, it was not engineered by Phil Brown, because Phil, he did some of his other work, but he didn't do this. It was engineered by Richie Schmidt, who was another one of the house engineers from, or a house engineer from Trident, yes. And it has, it's the who's who of session musicians.
Really?
Jim Gordon is playing drums on this album. Klaus Voormann, who played on this track, who worked with the Beatles, he worked with George Harrison, you know, very much around at the time.
Yeah.
Chris Spedding on guitar.
Really?
Herbie Flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Playing bass, but he didn't play bass on this. But the drums on this is the mighty Jim Keltner, who, like, he's like, you know, and it's just a catalogue of great session guys. But marvellous song. And, you know, Is it Radio 2? Of course it's Radio 2 in the UK. Is it Six Music? Well, I don't know. I listened to Six Music the other day. I think it probably is now. But it's part of our record collection. It's part of our history. And it's a fantastic song. Well sung, well produced, well recorded and well played. So that's why we've got it on. It's great.
But also you got to remember the time as well in the context. I mean, obviously it has to stand the test of time and still feel fresh and relevant now when we listen to it with our ears. But at the time, no one else was doing that kind of big sort of male pop vocal. And it actually won a Grammy Award, you know, that song. Yeah. And it just went huge. It was like number one in America in the pop charts for 4 weeks, 5 weeks at the top of the American adult contemporary charts. It was number one in Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, number 12 in West Germany. And it was number one in the UK for 5 weeks. It sold like 800,000 copies.
It's a great song. And the thing is, the sadness about this song is that the guys from Badfinger, you know, Tom Evans both committed suicide. And
over royalties and just struggling with money because of just trying to get recognition and pay for their
unbelievable
work.
Unbelievable, because they'd written some amazing songs. This must have made an absolute fortune, you know, to the songwriter, but they didn't see any of it, and they both committed. So it's a very, very sad story, that. And
it's tragic.
Yeah, a tragic story of rock. But you hear this an awful lot. I mean, I read the other day that Deep Purple had been ripped off £3 million quid by their ex-manager or accountant, I should say. And £3 million.
Do you know, it's really weird because, you know, when they say con artists and stuff, you know, the reason why they're a good con artist is that you don't know they're conning you.
Mm.
And that's the thing. And I remember meeting a few people in my time, and I'm sure you have as well, where you know their reputation, you know that they're actually not trustworthy, but you wouldn't pick up on if you hadn't been told, even though I always make my own mind up in every situation as fresh, you wouldn't guess it. You just couldn't. There's nothing on radar.
Well, that's right. And, you know,
it's
there are always signals. And, you know, I'm very trustworthy and I trust everybody, you know, right from the word go until they let me down, you know. And then it's, you know, doom and destruction. But it is, you know, prevalent in the recording business and terrible, you know. And it's at the bottom of the footer of my emails, you know, about the, I forget his name, Thompson. Hunter S. Thompson, I will give you the quote in a minute, off to the next record. We'll be right back.
Grand Funk Railroad. I can't say railroad, it's the R thing. And that song is called Sin's a Good Man's Brother, and it's the opening track from their third studio album, Closer to Home. That was released on the 15th of June 1970 on Capitol Records, darling.
Rolling Stone magazine said you cannot talk about rock in the 1970s without talking about Grand Funk Railroad. It's a great riff, that's a really cool riff. But it's the end of the show.
I know.
And before I finish, the music business is a cruel and shallow money trench, a long plastic hallway where thieves and pimps run free and good men die like dogs. There's also a negative side. He's talking about the music business, and that's Hunter S. Thompson. That's all I can say, really.
Yeah. There are characters. We've met a few.
We have.
And I'm sure. Yeah. But at least, you know, the thing is that we're living life and embracing the heartbeat while we've got it, yeah? And that's the main thing, isn't it?
I love this show, you know, it's great. It's like hanging out on a date, isn't it, every week. Brilliant.
I know. And thanks so much for joining us. And, do send us an email, or you can find us on Instagram and Twitter and all those other places.
Yep, so we'll see you next time, and look forward to it.
Yeah,
I look forward to a great selection. I think we're going to change the show slightly next time, so it could be quite interesting, I think, in terms of what we're going to do. But we'll let you find out.